and good morning to you. I'm Ellen Speer, and you're listening to Morning Drive on WTBR Pittsfield Community Radio. Thank you so much for choosing to spend your morning with me and my special guest, Leslie Hertzberg. She's the executive director of the Berkshire County Historical Society. Welcome, Leslie.
Thanks for having me, Ellen.
Oh, I'm delighted to talk with you. First of all, tell me about the Berkshire County Historical Society. When I think of you, I always think of Arrowhead.
Yeah.
So what's that relationship like?
Yeah, what is a little confusing is that we have two separate names, but we are really one and the same. So the Berkshire County Historical Society has existed as an entity since 1962.
Okay.
When it was incorporated and owned three buildings in Pittsfield. And it, one of those buildings was not Arrowhead at the time.
What were the three, out of curiosity? Do you know?
There was one up on, there was one on East Housatonic Street.
Okay.
A beautiful Victorian. There was one in up past the hospital, one of the oldest buildings in Pittsfield. And then there was one more that was the, let me think. There was one more that I think was owned by the Art Center now.
Okay.
But they sold all three in order to purchase Arrowhead in 1975.
Was it in danger?
It wasn't in danger necessarily. It had been owned by four families, four private families, since the Melvilles left it. The Melville family left it in 1927. So they thought it was important enough that they should sell off the properties they had, and pool their resources, and purchase Arrowhead. And so we've owned Arrowhead since 75.
And besides Arrowhead, what are the other responsibilities of Berkshire County Historical Society? Are you doing contemporary history, trying to document what's happening today? Is there a collection of some sort?
Yeah, there is actually quite a large collection. I think so many people associate us so closely with Arrowhead that they forget that we are the Berkshire County Historical Society, which encompasses so much more. Part of that does mean that we are specifically Pittsfield's Historical Society, because Pittsfield doesn't have its own Historical Society. So we do function in that way, but we do encompass the whole county. And we have been collecting since 62. And that means throughout the decades and even contemporary, we've been doing a lot of oral histories to talk to more recent immigrants into the county to collect their stories. And so there is a lot of collection going on all the time. And so it dates back from the 18th century through today, truly, our collection.
So to use the technical term, what kind of stuff do you have?
So we have a lot of different kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
So what that means is, and you're so familiar with museum collections, but basically when we say ephemera, we mean anything on paper. But that means diaries, journals, books, photographs, postcards, and they are collections relating to Berkshire County, but also specific entities within Berkshire County. So the Town Players, the Maplewood Institute for Young Ladies.
What, pray tell?
That was the one of the original schools in Pittsfield for young women. And so we all know kind of where the Maplewood apartments are today.
Yes.
That was a school for young women.
So without the work that you do, the stories of this place would be dispersed, would be lost potentially?
Right. And I think, you know, many towns do have their own historical societies, but we really want to function as kind of an overarching entity that can bring people together, especially stories, obviously, as I said, about Pittsfield. We try to focus on Pittsfield, but we want to branch out to other communities as well. So there are things that are dispersed in other collections, certainly, but we are a very central repository for genealogical records and history of the county.
So if somebody is doing some genealogical research, let's say, they can get in touch with you and go through whatever materials you all have?
They can. They can make an appointment to visit our archives, which are located at Arrowhead. Usually, I will say also for genealogy, we direct a lot of people to the Berkshire Athenaeum and their local history room, which has a really wonderful repository. But we're a great place to start, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so if somebody's cleaning out the attic because they're about to downsize and they find stuff that they think might be a treasure, are you the people they can call at least to come take a look and see if it's worth saving?
Sure, sure. We go and look at a lot of people's stuff, for lack of a better word.
What's doing at Arrowhead these days? It's, I know, you know, just homeowners, anybody not even with an historic house, it's a constant, constant thing to keep your home in good repair. There's so much going on at Arrowhead. Tell us a little bit in the month of July, perhaps what's going on, both keeping it in repair and programs for the public.
Yeah, well, let's start with keeping it in repair. So preservation is always a very constant thing when you have an older house. And so one of the things that we've been working on recently is to add shutters back to Arrowhead, which historically would have had shutters. And somehow over the years, they just disappeared.
Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, people stick their shutters down in the basement and that's where you find them. But we didn't find any, which is really quite curious. So we had to undertake a pretty large fundraising scheme to raise the money to have the shutters completely rebuilt. And luckily, there are enough historic photographs where you can base and then historic records where you know what shutters from the 19th century looked like. So those are being rebuilt and by a preservation carpenter. And we've received grants to support those, both from the 1772 Foundation, Historic or Preservation Massachusetts, and the Fitzpatrick Trust, the Jane and Jack Fitzpatrick Trust also supported this project. So the first part of that was to get the shutters back on the facade, and that happened last fall. And now the rest of the shutters are being built, and they will be installed this summer into the fall. So the whole house will have its shutters again.
That's
and it
great.
Really does change the way that it appears.
It really does. It really does. Now, how long have you been at Arrowhead now?
Now it's been 6 years.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit, what was it like the first time, right after you got the job, when you walked through the house the first time? What kind of feeling did you have? There's always something about an historic building, either, you know, the hair on the back of your neck stands up, or you feel like, wow, I've been here before. Can you remember in the Wayback Machine what it was like when you walked through the first time?
Yeah. I mean, I think what's really funny is that I grew up in a historic home. So the smell of old homes is very specific. The smell of wood, it's very specific memory, sensory memory. And so for me, those are the things that I always connect to. I'm like, this house smells beautiful, like wonderful and old. So that's something that hits me. Arrowhead was built about 1784 and not occupied by Herman Melville until 1850. So there was a lot of life to that house even before Melville's story begins there. And so when you walk into that house, you have to imagine it as a tavern or an inn, which it originally was, on a very well-traveled road, which it still is today on Holmes Road, that travelers could get there. There's a huge, beautiful open fireplace, an open hearth where they would do their cooking, where travelers would go into this large room, get a warm meal, and be able to retire to several bedrooms upstairs. And so that's how the building actually functioned before Herman Melville got there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So did the Melville family make alterations, change the house for the way they wanted to live?
They did, yeah. When Herman got there in 1850, he added the porch on the north side of the house, which he called a piazza. because that sounds so much more grand, right?
Had he just been back from the Grand Tour of Italy or something?
He hadn't been in Italy, but for some reason that romantic idea of a piazza, and especially on the north side of the house where it wasn't going to get any sun, but he built it there so he could look out at Mount Greylock, which he just fell in love with that view. And that's one of the reasons he purchased the house for his family.
Now, when you look at it now, there's a line of trees way distant. I know there was a lot of clear cutting way back when. Do you have any record of, you know, how far down is it past what you can see now before the tree line?
Yeah, what you can see now, the view shed is actually very similar. There is still a row of trees, but from historic photos, we know kind of how that land was cleared. And from Melville's study window, that view is actually still the same view that you see and that was documented in photographs and in paintings of the time. So we know how much was clear cut, a lot of over to October Mountain, which was named by Herman Melville, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What was it before that?
Do you I don't know. I don't know.
That mountain over there.
Yeah, that mountain.
So you've also done a lot with the outside, and I live nearby and drive by it several times a day and have seen paths mowed through. What kind of walking and outdoor activity can you do there now?
Yeah, now we have, so we have 45 acres. We own 45 acres, which is, you know, scaled back. Melville owned 160 acres. So, but we own 45 in the middle of Pittsfield, which is a lot, actually. And so now you can walk through our fields. There is a path mown through our fields and then up into the woods. So you can walk up into the woods and into the field. You walk past some of the mastheads, which are writing studios. The Mastheads is a nonprofit that promotes writers and school programs for poetry. And we have writers in residence there this summer. And so you can come and walk our grounds in the summer. You know, we say sunrise to sunset. You can definitely come and explore. And in the winter, you can come and snowshoe or cross-country ski. It's great for that.
Now, you said you have writers in residence. Do they actually live on the property?
They don't. They're actually staying in the house right across the street from Arrowhead, which is an Airbnb. You can stay right there. So they're all staying right there.
And they come and they do what?
And they write. They write for 3 weeks. So they work on new work, and then they will present it at the end of that time. So I think that's this year. It's July 30th.
Yeah, you do all have a lot of readings and do a lot of literature programs. And I know one of my personal favorites is the Moby Dick Readathon that you do. Is that scheduled, like, I assume, for later in the year?
Yep, that's scheduled. We always schedule it around Melville's birthday. Mm-hmm. So Melville's birthday is August 1st. And so we will actually start reading on July 31st, and we hope to finish by that Sunday. And that usually works out well. We read from about 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day. And you can sign up online for time slots. You can sign up for 15-minute slot of reading and come and read Moby Dick in the spot where it was written.
And you just come in and there's people gather in and out throughout the day and just listen?
Yeah. Yeah.
To the
work?
Some
people just listen. Some people want to read. Some people like to just listen, follow along. Yeah, you can come join us and read. Some people do it as a group. Mm-hmm. Some people.
What do you think it is about Melville's work that continues to invite interpretation, reimagination? There's a lot of theater that you're doing. There's a lot of other programs that are really looking at Melville from so many different points of view than traditional literary analysis.
Yeah, Melville lends himself to be reinterpreted and interpreted constantly.
Yeah.
And I think the way that Melville writes is very poetic. And so, but what he's covering and the different topics that he covers, and not just in Moby Dick, but, you know, taking Moby Dick, for example, you know, he's been interpreted in so many ways. People look at Melville biblically. People look at Melville environmentally. People look at Melville in terms of race relations, in terms of justice, themes, you know, for instance, in Billy Budd, the themes of justice and morality that echo through that entire novella are really important. So I've been told that they're read, it's read in law schools and a lot of different places. So Melville constantly opens himself up for interpretation and new interpretation, because in a lot of ways he was really ahead of his time in terms of the themes that he was writing about and themes that are still relevant today.
Mm-hmm. And throughout his body of work, so many people have been influenced, and I imagine that the Berkshire County Historical Society is looking for little clues of what was where.
Mm. In terms of his
descriptions that might be descriptions that fall locally or are influenced by the local environment?
Yeah, so very specifically in Moby Dick, especially for people who live in the Berkshires, if you read Moby Dick, you'll start recognizing things. Like, he'll reference things like Berkshire marble. Well, Lee, Mass. Was a very important production center for quarries, for marble quarries. So when he's referencing Berkshire marble, he means that marble from Lee. And when he's referencing things like, there's a wonderful passage about Ahab having a scar on his face, and Melville describes it as being, you know, rendered like lightning cutting through an old elm. And he's truly referencing the elm that used to stand in Park Square, which was a really specific a big tourist attraction at the time.
Yeah.
So he's really making a lot of Berkshire references.
Yeah. And much has been made since you arrived there of the Melville-Hawthorne relationship. I imagine you are hearing from everybody about of every kind of opinion about the interpretation and reinterpretation of their relationship.
Right. So so Melville had a very close relationship with Hawthorne, though they only spent 18 months here together. Hawthorne only lived in Lenox for 18 months, but Melville chose to come here specifically because he knew Hawthorne was here so that he could develop their recent, they had a meeting on Monument Mountain, August 5th of 1850, and he kind of sensed in Hawthorne a kindred spirit and also something of a father figure. Melville lost his father when he was just 12, and Hawthorne is 13 years Melville's elder. So Melville really recognized in Hawthorne this person that he really wanted to know, and Hawthorne, you know, responded in kind, and so they did develop a wonderful relationship. Yes, there have been a lot of, if you look at their writing, it's very romantic in many ways, but I think we also have to remember that when people are writing in the 19th century,
it was pretty gooey.
It was pretty gooey, yeah. Like both women and men, you referred to your closest friends as, you know,
my darling
your
friend.
Bosom friend, yeah, you know, your bosom friend. And, you know, you used much more flowery language and that we don't use today. But so a lot of people read into that a lot.
Didn't Hawthorne live in what's called the Red House at Tanglewood, what's now at Tanglewood?
Yes.
So people can see that when they're driving by.
They can drive by. It is privately owned. It's owned by Tanglewood. Yeah. But
And I thought the two of them served in the Navy together.
No. Melville did serve in the Navy. Hawthorne, no.
Oh, I thought they were serving together for a period of time. And there's a cache of letters, apparently.
One side of a group of letters. Melville got rid of his group of letters. Hawthorne had kept his. But that's often what happened when there was a queer relationship. The letters were often burned and to get rid of the evidence. Now, again, we don't know that that was their romantic relationship, But Melville did do away with his letters, and I think only one survives from Hawthorne to Melville.
Mm-hmm. And that famous hike up Monument Mountain, you all do a recreation of that every year as well?
We do. So while we're in the midst of reading Moby Dick, we actually do the hike up Monument Mountain. So this year we'll be doing it Sunday, August 3rd. At 9. You can meet us there. It's a free program. You come up, you come hike with us, plan to hike, and we'll read the poem that they read together at the top of Monument Mountain, which was actually by another Berkshire writer, William Cullen Bryant. He wrote a piece called Monument Mountain.
Yeah, it's quite a literary area here. Mm-hmm. Many, many writers' homes. Back to Melville and Hawthorne again. Talk a little bit about the theater piece that you've been doing over the years that's been developed. It's a two-person piece about with the two characters being Melville and mm-hmm. Hawthorne to try to delve a little bit into that relationship.
Yeah, we've been working with two artists, Tom Truss and Matthew Cumby. Tom is local. He's a Berkshire artist, singer, actor, dancer. And Matthew lives up in Maine. He's actually a professor at Colby mm-hmm. College. But they've been developing this program, this piece, for many years, and it's evolved. So every time it's actually been performed at Arrowhead or somewhere else, it's actually changed a little bit, which is always interesting to see. So I've seen the staged version just this winter at MCLA, and then seeing it as a site-specific performance at Arrowhead. So they're always different, and they're always changing and evolving this piece. But it does incorporate letters from Melville to Hawthorne and Hawthorne to Melville. It incorporates their own writing, so in terms of their novels, and then and it incorporates music, dance, video, and it's really an interesting way to think about their relationship and to introduce people to their relationship, and really only using their own words and passages from their work. So
and the site-specific piece was kind of interesting, too. It's done in a barn, and mm-hmm. did they know about the barn, or were they in the barn before they started to work, or did they adapt it to the barn?
They came to Arrowhead to explore before they actually started to work on it. And they also incorporate parts of their own lives and history into it as queer artists, and about how they ended up meeting and how... so there are these wonderful kind of interspersed pieces about, you know, how they met or how... their friendship developed. Mm-hmm. And so there's something for everyone in it. We're not performing it this summer there. They're taking the summer off to develop it more. But you can definitely find it pieces from it online. But it's called Rewritten. And it is on Matthew Cumby's website.
Mm-hmm. That's something certainly to keep an eye on. So talk, what are the hours? What are the things every day that people can do this summer at Arrowhead before we talk a little bit about the wonderful downtown Pittsfield
yeah.
tours that are going on?
So if you want to visit Arrowhead and you've never visited Arrowhead, I always have people come up to me and they're like, I've driven past this house so many
times,
but I've never been in. And so I say, well, then now is the time.
Yeah.
We do tours every day except Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So Thursdays through Mondays, you can come and there are 6 tours a day. You can actually buy your tickets ahead of time online, or you can just walk in it's just an hour tour. And we have a docent who will guide you through. And it's a really wonderful way to find out what's so special about this house. And there are a lot of special things about it.
So if you are interested in being a docent, because I know a lot of people like to give tours and do things like that, how do you get involved in that program?
Yeah, we need tour guides. We always need tour guides. We need people to work on our shop, but mostly we need tour guides. So if you've ever been curious about Melville, if you're already a Melville fanatic and you'd like to give tours of his house, we can always use people coming and volunteering with us to give those tours. And we train you. We'll give you all the information. And even if you've never read Melville before and you just want to engage in the community in some way and meet people from all over the world, that's the other thing. There are people from literally all over the world that come to Arrowhead. So you will meet people from all over. It's really interesting. And benefit our cultural institutions.
So can you freelance a bit, or is it a set tour that you have to memorize?
No, there's definitely room for some freelancing there. You know, we want you to hit the high points that people should really take away with them. But if you want to focus on something specific, I had a docent who focused on specifically on decorative arts, because that's what he was really interested in. So he really took people through all the decorative arts in the house. So we'd love to have people volunteer, and you can always look on our website at berkshirehistory.org, or you can email us at melville@berkshirehistory.org, and we would love to meet you.
And on the Berkshire County Historical Society side, is there a volunteer opportunity there to either to research or to deal with the stuff?
There is, yeah. You can come in and work with our curator. And so we have projects documenting a lot of parts of our collections. So we usually need people in that area as well.
That's great. So I read with great interest about a group of downtown Pittsfield walking tours that are going to go on. Because so many times as a Pittsfield resident, I hear, oh, yeah, that's the place I drive through on the way to Tanglewood. Or, yeah, that's the place I drive through on the way to Massmoka or Great Barrington. And I'm like, why don't you stop? So in just a minute or two, we'll get into the meat of them in a minute. But in a minute or two, what kinds of opportunities? There's one, two, three, four, five different tours going on.
Yeah.
I think of different kinds. Is that right?
Oh, even more, actually. Yeah. There's seven.
And they're thematic, right?
They're thematic, yeah. Well, I think we just really wanted to embrace the Berkshire County Historical Society side of us, of our dual personalities that we have. Because obviously so often we get focused on Melville because we're at Arrowhead. But I think this is a great opportunity, being in downtown Pittsfield, to explore Pittsfield and all the things that make it special.
And it was quite the center at the beginning of the country. It was an important city.
It really was. There were a lot of important things and people that lived in Pittsfield, important to early agriculture. You know, the first agricultural fair was held in Pittsfield in 1810. Elkanah Watson was the first one to develop. He was the head of the Berkshire Agricultural Society, and they decided he wanted to show off his merino sheep, which we know so well from Hancock Shaker Village still keeps merino sheep because the Shakers embraced merino sheep. But he was the first one to bring them here, and they had the first agricultural fair on Park Square in 1810.
Well, we're going to talk a lot more about that in just a minute. My guest this morning is Leslie Hertzberg, the executive director of the Berkshire County Historical Society, and we are delighted that you're with us. And in just a minute, we'll be talking a little more about Berkshire County Historical Society, Arrowhead, and all of the history things that you can do in Pittsfield. So stay with us on Morning Drive.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sundrini.com.
Pittsfield Community Television has relaunched our website at pittsfieldtv.org with a new design to make it easier to find our live streams with PCTV Select, where you can watch live sports, city meetings, and more. Now it's simple to find our past shows on demand and future TV schedules. You can also quickly find information on how to be a member, our upcoming training sessions, and how to donate to PCTV. Check it out at pittsfieldtv.org.
What would it be like not having PCTV's reliable coverage of our Pittsfield City meetings? Well, the answer is it would be like driving in the darkness without headlights. We need the light to show us exactly what's coming our way. PCTV's coverage is that light. It's so reliable and dependable, we don't even think about not having it, but nothing can be taken for granted. Support this building block of democracy today. It's too important to lose, especially now. Pittsfield Community Television, see it all, decide for yourself.
Welcome to Beyond, a one-hour program of science fiction, fantasy, and adventure. I'll be your host, Beverly Prentice. Listen in every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. My email is beyond3x5@gmail.com.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
And good morning to you again. I'm Ellen Speer, and I'm here with Leslie Hertzberg, Executive Director of the Berkshire County Historical Society. She's been telling us about all of the things that they do, both on behalf of the entire county and on behalf of Arrowhead in the center of Pittsfield. Before we talk about those Pittsfield walking tours that we spoke about just before the break, something very wonderful happened that you all were responsible for that was connected to the Revolutionary War 250th anniversary that the country is celebrating. The Marquis de Lafayette himself arrived on Park Square.
Yes, yes. The Marquis de Lafayette was invited back to the U.S. 50 years after the end of the war. And so he was going to lay the cornerstone of the Bunker Hill Monument. And so what he decided to do was tour the country ahead of this presentation that he was going to make. And so he ended up touring for 2 years, and he was welcomed back with open arms. He was called the nation's guest. He was really kind of the 19th century version of a rock star. People loved him because he kind of gave of himself. He came here when he was only 19 years old to fight for a war that wasn't even his, from France. And he ended up, you know, becoming George Washington's kind of right-hand man, leading troops into battle, and also financing a lot of the war effort, bringing troops and ships from France as a very wealthy man. And so he was kind of, he owned this hero status in the U.S. And so when he came back, you know, the towns just kind of rolled out the red carpet for him. And he came to Pittsfield June 13th of 1825. So this was the 200th anniversary of him coming through our city. And it was a really big deal. I mean, people came out in droves to see him. And so we reenacted that. So maybe if you were driving through Park Square on that Friday afternoon, you may have seen a horse and carriage and someone in a top hat coming around. Our mayor was there to greet him, as the mayor of Pittsfield was at the time. And so we gathered. He came into the city at 4 p.m., and so we had him come in at 4 p.m. on June 13th. And he came in. He gave a speech. He was welcomed, as I said, by the mayor. And then we had some music from the Berkshire Concert Choir and the Berkshire Fife and Drum Corps. And then they led us to Hot Plate Brewing Company, and we did, he gave 13 toasts historically. We didn't give that quite that many. We did do some toasts that day and welcomed him back to Pittsfield. So it was a really fun thing to organize. And
I saw that retiring to the tavern was part of every visit to every city as he worked his way east. I was surprised in delving into it a little, and I had the opportunity to interview the Marquis himself, of how progressive he was and how he found, to his despair, that the country was not as progressive, particularly around slavery, issues like slavery, issues like pure democracy in the French sense. After the revolutions there?
Yeah, he was a really interesting guy. One of the things he did during the revolution was he had, there was an enslaved man who ended up being a double agent. And he was undercover, and he infiltrated the British army camps and brought them back. I shouldn't say he was a double agent. He was a spy for the U.S.
Yeah.
And so he brought them back information, and it was really valuable. And when the war was over, he was freed, and he actually took Lafayette's name. It's so interesting. But he became he was a big proponent of abolitionism, and also a big proponent of women's education.
Yes, yeah, ahead of his time in many ways. Mm-hmm. And again, he wagged his finger a little bit at some of the sites, as I understand it, as he traveled around the country, saying, you need to go back to the roots. You need to go back to the beginning. I despair. I gave so much here. I don't want to see you go away from it, which mm-hmm. I thought was fascinating. So back to these walking tours. One of them is about the early history of the country and sites along the way. Can you talk a little bit about what that'll entail with that walk? And again, you talked a little bit about merino sheep. But, you know, we think of Pittsfield as very remote at this time, yet during the revolutionary times in the early part of the country, we were quite a center.
We were, yeah. So there is one tour that will focus on Revolutionary Pittsfield. And obviously we focused on the Lafayette part, but there were a lot of important events that happened in the western part of the state. You know, people usually focus on, you know, Lexington and Concord,
Saratoga,
and Boston and Saratoga and Ticonderoga. But a lot of things actually happened in the western part of the state and happened here first. So things like dissenting against the crown. The Berkshire Resolves happened really early. They happened in 1724.
And they were?
And that happened at Widow Bingham's Tavern. So that was what is now the Red Lion Inn, July 6th of 1724. And that was where citizens got together, prominent citizens like Ashley, like Sedgwick, and came together and said, you know, we are not going to... we are still citizens. They were kind of walking a fine line by saying we're still citizens of England, but we are not going to abide by these unfair taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Berkshire Resolves were the first ones. So they didn't come out of Boston first. They actually came out of the Berkshires. And then the closing of the courts, that happened in August of 1724.
Yeah. So what will the tour entail? Where do people start? What time of day are these?
So they all start, most of them start at 11 a.m. and they are on a variety of dates. But the Revolutionary Pittsfield one will start, the walking tours in the center of Pittsfield start at the Athenaeum, just outside the front doors of the Athenaeum. And that one will encompass the Lafayette tour site, but also sites like where Patrick's Pub is. If anyone's ever noticed a historic marker when you go into Patrick's Pub, you know, British prisoners of war were kept near that site. There's also a great marker for Easton's Tavern on South Street, right next to the Berkshire Museum. And at Easton's Tavern, they gathered a really significant Pittsfield man named John Brown was led this meeting in at night on May 1st of 1725. And that meeting cemented the plan to capture Fort Ticonderoga. So So that happened here in Pittsfield.
So you'll learn all about that in, what, 90 minutes? 1 hour?
Yeah, about an hour to 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So wear good shoes, rain or shine, unless it's a monsoon.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So turning from early history, let's talk about the contemporary history. There's a mural tour as well, where people will look at the incredibly colorful and large murals that are sprouting up all over the city.
Yeah, the mural tour, I've just always been interested in the murals that have been sprouting up. And so I decided that I would lead that tour myself.
Oh, good.
And there's actually a wonderful site you can go to, Love Pittsfield, and they have a digital tour of the murals. But if you want to come and do it in person, we won't be able to hit all of them. But the ones that we can see from the center and from North Street, we'll be able to, there are great sight lines too, so to be able to look down to Pops Peterson's walk with her on near Jubilee Hill, you can kind of see that through the streetscapes across this, where the train comes through. And then things like, there are just some amazing murals that have been popping up through grant-funded initiatives, through cultural Pittsfield. Yeah. And so we'll be walking through and seeing a lot of those, talking about the artists, talking about the significance of those.
So you'll learn a little bit about the artists, too.
Yeah.
I heard you mentioned just now Jubilee Hill. And to people who may not be familiar with Pittsfield, I suppose there are a lot of references to areas of the city that people might not know.
Right. And especially in the Pittsfield architecture tours and the Pittsfield industrial history. Because as you mentioned before, you know, Pittsfield was a really significant center for industry. So first agriculture and then industry. We had a lot of mills in Pittsfield, a lot of paper making, a lot of grist mills, and specifically a lot of woolen mills.
So that industrial tour is going to take us to places that are now repurposed or gone completely, or
a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of both. One of our docents, John Dixon, who has actually written a book about Pittsfield Mills, is going to be leading those tours. And so if you're interested about Pittsfield's industrial history, he'll be leading those tours. There's one called The Early Years, one about the mill village specifically, and then one around Silver Lake where there was a lot of industry.
So you're facing contemporary history as well, it sounds like, with
yes.
Silver Lake.
Yeah.
And then you were talking about the architecture tour. There are so many beautiful buildings that have been mm-hmm. repurposed and repurposed again in downtown Pittsfield. Tell us about some of the highlights that people will see on that tour.
Yeah, so there's one about North and South Street historic buildings. So the Historic Commission went through and added plaques on the sidewalks that some people may walk over them and not even pay attention, but they are installed over 20 locations throughout downtown. And so he'll be focusing on some of those sites. And some of those buildings are still extant, and some of them have been repurposed for other uses, but focusing around Park Square, but also some of the buildings, and specifically buildings that aren't there any longer.
There's always a tension between wanting to save the beauties and wanting to level them and build something completely energy efficient and tight and different and purpose built. Does the society get involved in that as well?
We don't. We do get a lot of calls about it, but we really have to defer to the Historic Commission because they're the ones that have a little bit more say. We can make recommendations, of course, but the Historic Commission does things like demolition delays, and they can kind of provide a stay of execution sometimes for mm-hmm. these buildings.
But you are a place that people can do some research.
Definitely.
Perhaps leading up to making decision-making about things.
Yes.
And then you have another interesting one and very timely also, which is the history of sports in Pittsfield, particularly around Wacona Park.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people know about Wacona Park, but maybe don't know the full history of it. So we've teamed up with the city. And so we have two different people giving those tours. We have Larry Moore, who's the director of the Baseball in the Berkshires Museum, where you can go and see some of their exhibits. They're at the Lee Outlets this summer. And so if you're wondering about any of that, more extensive knowledge about baseball in the Berkshires, that's where you can find them. But Larry will be giving some of our Wacona Park tours, as well as Jim McGrath, who is the director of the Parks Department. Jim knows certainly a great deal about Wacona Park, and also about, you know, what are they doing to restore Wacona Park? Because if you've been there recently, you know, you can't sit on the main grandstands. There are some temporary bleachers in place. But we're able to still use the park for Babe Ruth and high school games, which is actually really exciting.
Yeah, so that ought to be interesting and have a lot to say. Why, again, was Pittsfield, there's an ongoing debate. I know some believe it's settled that baseball started here, and some people think it's not so settled. Will it ever be settled?
Well, it's not that baseball started here, necessarily. It's the first written mention of the game in America.
Okay.
Is Pittsfield. So in the town meeting minutes in 1791, it was noted that there will be no playing of any kind of game on the town common because they were going to break the new meeting house windows. And so when they spelled out these games that they were not allowed to play, including quoits and cricket, one of them was then baseball. And so it has actually been recognized now at the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. There is now a exhibit panel that references that mention in Pittsfield because people think, oh, you know, Doubleday, and that was in the 1830s. So that was much, much later. This is 1791. So to our knowledge, this is still the earliest written mention of the game of baseball.
We'll take it.
Right.
So the another tour that's my personal favorite as being a history nerd, there's a cemetery tour. Why do historians love cemeteries so much?
Cemeteries are fascinating.
You're and, one too, huh?
Yeah, I am too. Well, I'm giving that tour too, so I, you know, I'm a little biased. So the Pittsfield Cemetery is so beautiful. I mean, it's just a beautiful place to walk around. And there was a movement in the 19th century to make cemeteries into more of a park-like setting with these fountains and these hills and these beautiful kind of vistas to make it a place where people want to go and to kind of be in a place that's still beautiful but still remembering those that have gone before us. And so Pittsfield Cemetery falls into that category. And the history of Pittsfield cemeteries is really interesting, and where their first burial grounds were versus where we ended up are some different types of places. And so there are ways that graves are laid out in our current cemetery where you can see where they were actually moved from the other cemeteries. And then there are some really interesting, notable residents of Pittsfield who are in those cemeteries. And so we can tell their stories. We can look at definitely both in the past, they've certainly focused on the men that have been interred there. And now we're kind of bringing the stories of the women to the forefront. And also African-Americans who fought in the Civil War. So people like Samuel Harrison is buried there with his family. And that's another wonderful house museum you can visit in downtown Pittsfield, which is the Samuel Harrison House, which will be open for tours on Saturdays this summer. So definitely go and check out the Samuel Harrison House on 3rd Street.
So cemeteries originally were on the outskirts of a city, right, because of disease and things like that in the early days. And then cities grew up around them. Was that why people were moved?
They were. So some of the earliest cemeteries you can still see, and they still are technically on the outskirts of where we kind of think of as the city limits, the East Part Cemetery and the West Part Cemetery. So the West Part Cemetery is out as you drive out towards BCC on West Street, appropriately. There's a little cemetery just off there. They just marked it with a new sign. And that was actually close to what was called Pittsfield's Poor Farm. So that was a place where the city took care of those who couldn't take care of themselves. They went to a place called the Poor Farm or the... and so some of the people buried there are from that area or from that farm. But then the East Part Cemetery is out on William Street, and that actually has the grave of the first female settler, I should say, the first white female settler born in Pittsfield.
And that's a tiny little place. As you're heading toward Dalton, it's on the right-hand side. Is that
the one
I'm thinking of?
There's a stone wall around it. Mm-hmm.
So who was someone buried there that was surprising to you that you had no idea in all the Pittsfield?
Oh,
you named a few already.
Right. Well, the first white she is the white settler.
Yeah.
her name was Sarah Deming. So we talk about Deming. But her stone is still there. And there's a wonderful story about, you know, that they couldn't settle there because there were, you know, Native American raids on their home and all of this. But her stone is there, and you can go and see that. But in terms of the Wakona Street Cemetery, there's a lot of really interesting people buried there.
So people are going to be surprised on your tour.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And so again, how do you sign up for these tours? When do they start? Are they a particular day every week?
So the tours start, the first one starts on July 2nd. So they'll go July and August.
Week?
Yeah, coming up next week. And that one, the first one we'll do is called Neighbors and Strangers. So if you've ever wanted to know about immigrants to Pittsfield, who lives in Pittsfield, that's a really interesting tour. and so you can sign up on our website. So berkshirehistory.org. It would be great if you could buy your tickets ahead of time, because we don't really have a way to sell them kind of. We don't have a mobile way to sell them in the field. Right. So you can sign up ahead of time, buy your tickets. There's a big yellow book now button, so you can't miss how to sign up on our website, berkshirehistory.org.
Talk about that immigrant tour again. We didn't mention that one.
Yeah. So that one's called Neighbors and Strangers, and that one's given by Cynthia Farr Brown, who's a PhD. She's our former board chair and just a great researcher, and really wanted to delve into who lived here, specifically African-American residents of Pittsfield. We've been gathering a lot of, we've been digitizing a lot of African-American stories, oral histories that are on our website now. So some of those, and people who have moved to Pittsfield kind of over the centuries, and where they lived, what they did, and where they worked, and just a really interesting tour.
Any others we didn't mention?
I think we got to all of the ones that are...
And what's the one, what's the tavern tour? There's one that's at 5:30 in the evening as opposed to the others that are in the mid-afternoon, mid-mornings.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that anyone who's working, who's not necessarily on vacation, maybe could be able to go to the Wakona Park tour. So one of those is at 5:30, and we meet at the Wakona Park gates. So we don't meet downtown, but we do meet at Wakona Park. So people can get to that after work if they're available. But usually these run Wednesday through Saturday.
And the early history tour, isn't that led by someone in historic costume?
Yes, that one is led by Tim Abbott, who is a reenactor and a researcher and just a wonderful fount of knowledge.
So, and that includes a tavern stop, as I recall.
It does.
Too.
He likes to finish his up with a little libation.
An adult libation.
Yes.
And are all of these appropriate for families, pretty much?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. All of them.
So you can, if the kid can walk, roughly how long do you think they go? A couple miles, something like
that?
Yeah,
really just maybe a mile, maybe a little farther, but definitely be prepared to walk. Mm-hmm. Wear comfortable shoes, sunscreen. As you said earlier, we're going to do rain or shine unless there's some kind of monsoon.
So dress for the weather like we do in the Berkshires.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about, there's so much going on in July in Arrowhead. Can you go through a little bit of the programs that people can see there? There's so much choice and so many different kinds of things. You talked about all the early August is all the Melville birthday and commemorations. But July, what can people see?
Yeah, in July, we'll be opening our summer exhibit, which is called Marriage and Memory. Weddings in Berkshire County through the centuries. So if you've ever wanted to know, you know, see like historic wedding gowns, historic wedding shoes, which are really beautiful. That is a wonderful exhibit. You can come for free. You don't have to buy admission to the house. You can come and just visit Arrowhead and see that exhibit. That opens on July 5th. And you can come during when the museum is open and see that. We're going to be doing some sea shanties with Alex Harvey and Shinbone Alley and cider with the Berkshire Cider Project and hot plate beer. Come and sing along with some sea shanties. If you've never seen Alex perform, he has so much fun. You're going to sing along. You're going to have a great time. That's on July 10th.
And the connection there is Billy Budd by Melville?
Just Melville on the sailing ships,
okay.
Right? Yeah. And Billy Budd, yeah. We have a playwriting workshop. If you've ever been interested in trying your hand at playwriting, this is led by Melville's great-great-great-granddaughter, who is named Elizabeth Doss. She's wonderful. She actually presented another work called Poor Herman last summer at Arrowhead. But she's back to lead a playwriting workshop. So if you want to try your hand at that, she's wonderful. And then you'll be able to present your work in a showcase at the end of that week. So that week is July 13th through the 18th. And so on the 18th, they'll be presenting that work. And that's free. But then Elizabeth will do a reading of her new work based on Melville's Confidence Man. And that is a ticketed event on Saturday, July 19th.
And you have some outdoor things, too, as I recall. There's birding and things outside.
Yeah. I was just with them yesterday. The Berkshire Bird Observatory is doing bird banding at Arrowhead. So on Thursday mornings, they start at 4:30. You don't have to get there at 4:30 a.m.
Uh-huh.
Yes. You're supposed to do it in six-hour segments. And this is collecting data and then you're putting it into a national database so that we know about breeding and migration. Really fascinating. And so Ben Nickley from the Berkshire Bird Observatory is there Thursday mornings. He said the best time to come is really between 7 and 9 a.m. or 7 to 10. But I was there at 8 yesterday, in between 8 and 9, and I got to let a bird go. And so he sat on my hand and then flew away.
So you have to be prepared to touch birds, read the bands,
you don't
like
have to do anything. You can just be there to observe. Yes, yes.
Okay. This is terrific. There is so much going on at Arrowhead, care of Leslie Hertzberg, the executive director of the Berkshire County Historical Society. They're the people who collect our history around here. So if you've got questions about that, interested in volunteering, get in touch with Leslie. And where do they do that?
BerkshireHistory.org.
So thank you so much, Leslie, for being with us. I'm Ellen Speer, and you're listening to Morning Drive. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a good morning.